The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we're into our final April for Club Month show, Conan. So that's it. So it's rounded off on a very good note for you and for Skerry's Harps.
Oh, here we go.
Which is just a fantastic way of starting the show. It's Club Month. It's been a huge win for Skerry's Harps, going in, given no chance against Clontarf, going 7 points down. And you take it away from there.
They said we were done. They said we were finished. Great win. 7 points down, 5 at half time. So, big comeback. I don't mean to talk it down, but we were all delighted after.
This was last Thursday night, obviously, and so you won by a point. It was 2-13 to 2-12 in the end. And Clontarf have been in the semi final recently, obviously. The big name is Jack McCaffrey, and they're a good team. So this was a huge win for Skerry's, there's no doubt about that. The soccer goal was a classic. I don't know how you can get away with scoring a goal like that. Just basically, instead of going down on it, which we're all told to do, we just swung it in, crossed it, and yeah, it was like almost like a Manchester United cross into Wayne Rooney and bang into the back of the net.
There was somebody roaring, "Bend your fucking back, like, get down on it." But Stephen Smith, that's our man, slid it across the goals and put it away. But big Donal McElgorham as well. Good feet for a big man.
Good feet.
Yeah, and no, it was a good finish from him. And yeah, it was a great win, because Clontarf actually lost by a point to Ballyboden as well, and we've been watching the footage before that. So obviously, if you're losing by a point to them, you're well set up. Like,
so you could get out of the group then.
Yeah, we just have to beat Ballyboden.
Just have to be small matter of beating Ballyboden, and that's not going to be till September, obviously now. But you were telling me a funny one in the second half was their goalkeeper. So you're acting the maggot. He's got numbered calls to his midfielders, which isn't unusual to have some sort of a call, but he used numbers. He copped on to the fact he was using numbers, and he started shouting random numbers.
Our midfielder just started shouting 21, 21, and everyone looked, and then everyone started shouting these random numbers then, and you could see that he was looking all over, and then the crowd started shouting in 17-23, and it was, I've never seen an atmosphere like that towards one goalkeeper. I actually felt sorry for him, but it really worked for us for about 10 minutes. He kept just kicking straight down the middle to our midfielder, who in fairness was calling it, so maybe he was calling the number for him. But so that sort of gave us a grip to get back. I think we got level then, just we were 5 down, we got the 5 points back in a row, and then it was game on. That's
okay,
it.
Fantastic stuff. And you scored a goal in the first half, 22nd minute. Honest to God, we're not going to spend a whole show talking about this Skerry's win. This is the last week. You got a goal, came off a long ball into the square. What are we preaching? What does Keane Ward say? Get it in there.
It was a shot to drop short, right? You know. So
all right. Well, they often work out in your advantage, right?
Yeah. So do you want me to talk about the goal? Or
go on, yeah. Talk us through the goal quickly.
My girlfriend thinks he scored 2 goals. I haven't had the heart to tell her that I didn't score the second goal, because I was in there for the second one. But I didn't correct her when I came home, and she was like, "Oh, Mr. 2 goals." And I was like, "Yeah, it was a great win."
Didn't deny it, a classic. Right, so Austin Stacks won the Kerry County title at the weekend, which is bizarre to think that a county championship is over. But we know Kerry have a unique county championship structure. In this was the county final of the senior clubs, which is pretty much the county final in every other county. So that's been played off and won by Austin Stacks, who went down by 5 points inside the opening 15 minutes to Dr. Crokes. And you would think that this was going to be Dr. Crokes' win, an easy win, because they're dominating. They came back brilliantly. They were led by Sean Quilter. He's only 18. He scored 7 points. He's 6'4" inside forward. Keep your eye out for him, because he's only, like, I mean, he's going to be a big player. Apparently. So that was it. Austin Stacks win the Kerry County title. They'll obviously play the other county championship, which involves all the area teams, which I think prestige wise is the bigger one anyways, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the one. If you win that, you go through to represent Kerry, unless South Kerry wins it.
And yeah, then it'll be back to Austin Stacks.
There's money in the bank for them. So
money in the bank, yeah.
But yeah, like, it's funny, I typed in Sean Quilter into Sportsfile just after I saw the 6'4" note. And like, it was in the Kerry minor squad there last year. He didn't start for them, but big rangy arms, like a bit of muscle about him as well. He's only a minor, so
yeah,
one to look out for.
Keep your eye out for him. Just they like to build their big Clifford and bloody inside forwards that can kick pints and can be that big. Your man Shaw from Crokes is no small man either. So like they have a wave of young big men that can score points on the inside line. Daniel Flynn was back in action for Johnstown Bridge. He scored 2 points. They beat Carberry. They were on TG Cahir yesterday. A tie beat Sarsfields. That was a big win for them. 1:30. Niall Kelly made his return in that one. So they're the two lads that have been away travelling. Niall Kelly going back in with Kildare, as we mentioned. Daniel Flynn not. Kevin Flynn went off injured, the Kildare wing back. And we know that Kevin Doyle is injured as well, so it hasn't been a great Kevin Doyle. I think he's a journalist with the Independent, is he? Owen Doyle.
But like that shit, he couldn't play for his club in the championship because he got injured playing a friendly with Kildare. That's April for clubs for you. That's the spirit of it.
That's a weird one. But like, I mean, the argument, I think injuries is a bit of a strange one because they can get injured anytime.
Yeah,
like, you know,
true,
that they're like, there's 15 versus 15 in the county thing. If you're going to get injured, you're going to get injured. Now I suppose if you had to play four, if you had to play on a Saturday, a Wednesday and a Saturday club, then you'd be like, well, that caused my injury. You know what I mean? But if you're playing every week, I don't know, you're just bad luck that you got injured. I wouldn't go so far. But it does show that when the county, when they go back to their clubs, all sorts of things can happen, whether it be fights in matches, whether they're just away from the county setup and they're not together as a group, which I think is important.
Yeah.
Another bit of a story coming from the club is Niall Kearns. He played for his club at intermediate level. So he scored 2 points. They were beaten 2-12 to 6 points. But he scored 3 of them. So it's great to see him back. He had heart surgery in October. We were mentioning that. So we're thinking, like, I mean, if he's back into the mix, you'd hope Kevin Hughes, his hamstring issues, he's back in the mix. We know Darren Hughes isn't. So Monaghan, kind of, we were speculating last week that they wouldn't have any of their 3 midfielders, and now they might have 2 of the 3. So, like, I mean, that makes them so much stronger if he's back right.
Yeah, I didn't realise Cairns was so young as well.
Yeah,
21.
Me neither.
Like, you know, in such a big year last year, coming with an All Star, and like, yeah, he's
All-Star
going to be more confident at the game. Like, I know he had heart surgery, so it's obviously not an ideal off season, but you know, with a nice, it might be refreshed now coming in. He's playing a full game for his club, and now coming into the summer for Monaghan at the right time.
Yeah,
you know, could be.
He had the operation was for a valve in his heart, and he played away because I was at an Errigal Kieran game on Friday night. So we have a show coming out tomorrow, which is coming from an Errigal Kieran fundraiser. It was for friends of Kevy, who's an ex-player of theirs who passed away, and in association with the Paul McGurr Association as well. So I went up. So Mickey Hart was in the mix, Kevin Hughes, Enna McGinley, Peter Canavan, Declan Bogue. So we're going to bring or release that show tomorrow. But it was at that game, Peter Canavan, it was funny, sent me a text on Friday. It says, "Wooly, will you get up at about 7:30 or about 7? I want to bring you out to a league game, Errigal league game." He says, and I says, "All right, okay." So I went out to the match with Peter anyway. So Errigal play a lovely brand of football, right?
Yeah.
And Peter was kind of bringing me up to show me that Tyrone football isn't as bad, you know? So I landed, I actually missed Peter. Peter got out for the start of the game. So when we landed, it was 1-4 to 3 points. And I saw maybe 25 minutes. There was 1 point scored in the 20. And about 4 times it went back to the opposition. I can't remember the club they were playing. It went back to their goalkeeper who just stood there tapping it on his toe.
Yeah, Peter, I'm out of here.
So Peter was livid. And then when at the start of the second half, in fairness, just before we left, we saw about 1-3, three great scores from Errigal Kieran. They won it handy in the end, but I thought it was a classic. But Peter reckons club football is turning it around in Tyrone. But a long-winded reason of why I brought that up is there was a Monaghan fella sitting in front of us at the game, and we got talking about Kearns, and he was telling us about he played all last year knowing about this valve in his heart. He just said, yeah, he just played along knowing that there was a risk, but just because the county ended then, and then his club got a run to the county final or something, that he just said, "Oh, look, shall wait till the year's out until I fix this like valve in my heart, which could potentially kill me." So he just played away anyways. So he has it fixed now anyways, thankfully.
GA players are nuts, aren't
they? Aren't they nuts? But I can see it from his point. Isn't it like, you would almost say, if you were given the option, right, will you, even for me, my knee is going to be riddled in arthritis very soon. It's had cartilage taken out of it since I was 15, right? So the bones are grinding off each other. So now my knee swells up the minute I do anything. I know I shouldn't be playing this Masters football or intermediate. I don't give a shit. The way I'm looking at it, I'm going to deal with that in my 50s.
Yeah, in your 50s. When you were 25, you said you'll deal with it in your 30s.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, it's not at the point where I can't walk yet. So I want to get one more year playing. Like, it's mad how players just don't seem to care about what might happen in the future with these injuries. And I'd say that's not the way I'm thinking about it, even pushing it on 10 years now, where I was pushing it on 40 years back then. I'd say that's not an uncommon kind of attitude towards injuries.
And, like, I'm not surprised, but he got treated in October. But a lot of people who say, I'll get treated when the season's over, then it's like, oh, but I need a big pre-season. I don't want to be coming in without any gym work or any running done. So, yeah, like, it's just good that he didn't get it sorted anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So Nicky English has been talking about Parnell Park. So I think Nicky English was at the launch for Sky last week. So he was saying, teams won't like going to Parnell Park. For me, I'm not sure. From an inter-county hurling perspective, for championship matches, it's a very difficult place to go. Like, you could argue, if you were the opposition, whether it's actually fair to play in Parnell Park, because it's very tight. I think it's too tight, yeah. For senior inter-county hurling matches, I think it's too tight. Ultimately, to win, you have to go to Croke Park to win anyways. So, I'm not sure about that. Like, I mean, Parnell Park is tight. You know that from playing on it. It's narrow. Like, it's as long as other pitches, or it seems to be as long as other pitches, but it's definitely, sideline kicks are kickable in Parnell Park, where you might look at one in another pitch and go, Jesus, I wouldn't even attempt that, you know, from there. But, like, I mean, you're within the laws to have your pitch whatever way. We know that from OMA last year, when you can narrow it when you want. And Parnell Park dimensions are 141 by 82 metres. So it's the 82 is the big problem. So Croke Park is 145 by 88. Nolan Park is 145 by 88. Cusack Park in Naas is 145 by 90. Pierce Stadium, 145 by 90. Páirc Uí Chaoimh, 144 by 88. Semple Stadium, 145 by 90. Gaelic Ground. Now, so they're all the big players in the hurling championship, which are all, most of them are at similar levels. Then you have the Gaelic Grounds in Limerick, which I was really surprised about, is 137 by 82, and nobody ever complains about that. And then Walsh Park is 142 by 80, so it's even narrower than Parnell Park. And Walsh Park is going to be a player in the Munster League this year. Waterford have home games, so I don't think Nicky English has any argument to be talking about Parnell Park. It's within the, you know, the diameters that are accepted. It looks like 145 by 90 is the biggest you're allowed.
Yeah.
And then I suppose maybe 80 is the smallest you're allowed. But, like, I suppose 8 metres for either side, it is a fair difference.
It is, yeah. Like, you think if you're in the 45 and how much harder it would seem to kick it from 49 metres ish. Like, you know, it does seem like a good bit away. And actually, with Parnell Park, because it's still long, it's 141. I think that makes it harder. It's narrower.
It makes it look narrow, but that's probably why it makes it look that little bit narrower. Like, the Gaelic Grounds is 137 by 82, so it's 4 metres shorter, two on either end. So maybe it doesn't look as rectangly, maybe, or something. Because Parnell Park does look rectangly, and then the stand in Parnell Park is very close to the pitch as well, which makes it look really narrow.
But you still have so far to go to get into shooting range in Parnell Park, but it's obviously harder to get there because it's narrower. You know, so you have that the whole way up the pitch, whereas a lot of narrow pitches, like the one you're talking about there, is shorter, like Gaelic Grounds. So you're closer to get a shot away.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But there's one there, Ballybuffet, apparently that was the biggest it can be. That is bullshit. It was like 145 by 90, I heard in the
that seems
Irish
to be
Times.
That seems to be the biggest size.
No way is Ballybuffet that size.
Yeah. Well, you see, you're checking all these off Wikipedia and off their Wikipedia page as well, so maybe they're not 100% accurate, but they seem to be close enough to what it is. But it is a weird one. I'm just thinking of the Gaelic Grounds. In an under-21 All-Ireland final, I scored a point from around the 45 against the wind. So that's definitely short, now that I think of it. Like, that has to be, I've never done that in my life.
But no, you've done this before. That's still 45 metres out. It's the distance between the two 45s or the two 65s.
Oh yeah, suffer from that. Yeah. Jeez, I'm after doing a Stevie McDonald there.
That's twice we need to get a sting on this.
All right, let's move on quickly. I'm a livid about that now. I'm contemplating editing that out.
Stevie's was worse because he thought if you brought the pitch in, the posts would have to move as well.
Yeah. And yeah, like, he thought you could just shorten it on one side or like
yeah, that's what it was. They moved the post down a little bit.
Okay, so Rory Hickey, so former hurling referee, says, if you look at inter-county hurling now, fullback David, the Clare fullback David McInerney, if he catches the ball on the 21 and the referee is standing beside him, David McInerney has the potential to land the ball on the other 13 metre line. There's no way in the world the referee is going to make it up to the other end, but if there was a referee in each half, it would take the workload off the referee. The other guy would be able to cut out a lot of the stuff that goes on off the ball when the play is down the other end. So he's talking about having two referees in hurling. Now, I'm against it in football, but for that reason alone in hurling, like, the referee should always be able to stay up to the play in football, especially the way the game has turned into a running game a lot of the time and the ball isn't being moved through the foot. Obviously, we're trying to change that and it is turning around. But in hurling especially, like, how can a referee... So he's, say he's down on the 30 metre line and he has to be down there because he's to throw in the ball or it's a penalty and it turns over and it's a long clearance. How can he blow a free at the other end of the... It's actually impossible in hurling. I'm surprised that... Again, this is... I'm straight back to hurling pundits. They never complain about anything about the game. Like, I mean, this is a clear argument for two referees in hurling. Do you ever hear any of them pushing this? You don't. I have a big problem with hurling pundits in that everything's so rosy in the garden, they never criticise, even to the point where they don't seem to want to campaign for two referees. But that is very difficult for a referee when the ball travels that far.
Yeah, and what you see a lot with referees, I think, sometimes, in fairness, is when a ball is down one end of the field, it's like they blow a soft free just to let themselves catch up on the play.
Yeah.
Do you know? And then that's what's happening. And then they'll probably blow it again to try and get themselves back up the pitch. And like, it's tough for them. They're running up and down. Like, if you can, at county level, if you can have two linesmen, four umpires, a fourth official, then you probably can bring in a second referee because, yeah, you're hitting the ball 70, 80 metres.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too far. It's too far for one referee, I think. I think that Rory definitely has a good point. Whereas in football, I don't think it's needed. And I do think you have that issue with two referees on the field. And I'm always saying this. And we know different referees have their own little pet hates and everything, that players have to deal with two of these fellas refereeing a game potentially in a different way. You know, like, and that's probably be the case in hurling as well. Some referees like to let it go. Other referees might be a bit more finicky. So, like, I don't like that dynamic of referees refereeing... Two referees refereeing the game in a different way in the same bloody game.
Yeah.
That'll be a problem no matter what way you look at it.
It would be. The only thing you could say is that you'll be switching around at half time, so you'll both have to deal with it.
Yeah, it's true. You'll have a half of both. Yeah, and it's true. In the international rules, you have the Ireland lad refereeing a little bit towards Ireland and the Australia fella doing the same thing.
I always thought Pat McInerney was very harsh on the Irish lads.
Oh, like, he's overcompensating.
Yeah, he's trying to show that he is neutral and he's a good referee.
Yeah, maybe that's the... I don't know. Maybe that's the case. So John Horan, actually, anyway, so he's not taking this... issue with club grounds facilitating other sports fundraisers. He's not taking this lying down. So I think he was talking in The Sun. They were the only quotes that I saw from him. I think it would be a very sad day that an organisation of our quality and standing would be constantly flip-flopping just because people get an opinion on social media. A large number of these people are not even members of our organisation. They're entitled to have their opinion. They're entitled to put it up on social media. But that's not what's coming through from the membership of our organisation, where we have meetings and we behave in a democratic manner. Now, a thing about John Horan there... The democratic manner is county board delegates who are completely under your control, pretty much. You know what I mean, John? So I wouldn't take too much the people you're meeting, where I do take the point on social media. A lot of it can be driven by people who aren't even members. So I do accept that there has to be an in-between here somewhere. And I see a lot of criticism coming from GAA members, actually. And even inter-county players, I'm seeing criticism coming from. But I do take John Horan's point, and the rule is there. And they can't keep flip-flopping and bowing to pressure from social media. Like, I mean, we know a lot of these social media trends and everything. It's a relatively small amount of people anyway, and it's not really the real world.
Mm.
So I don't think Twitter is representative. And I've always said this, brands and companies should never be afraid of the mob on Twitter, because there's only a small number of people you might not even want to speak to in normal life. But on Twitter, a mob and they scare an awful lot of brands into apologising or sacking someone. Like, it's scary, but it's not that many people. The best example ever was the RTE show. Do you remember the RTE show recently about the transsexuals? And it was trending. RTE had some guest on this show about transsexuals that a certain group of people disagreed with because he had been transphobic or something like this. So there was trends of avoid RTE or boycott RTE, this show. So this got trending anyways. And if you live your life on Twitter and expect to spend too much time on there, you might think, Jesus, this is really a lot of people. It was 5,000. And then the numbers came out on the RT about how many watched the game, and it was something like 400,000.
Yeah.
So their boycott, which you think on Twitter is enormous, this is an awful huge crowd of people who are really angry. Oh shit. 5,000. 400,000 didn't give a shit about their boycott and watched it. Do you know what I mean?
1%
So
almost.
Like, I do think social media, just stay off it. Like, it is an absolute, I've cut down my Twitter usage completely, and I'm a much better, happier person for it. And I'm not exposed to all this bullshit trends and outrage and all this kind of thing. I am living in the real world where these outrage things are not important to the people I meet on a daily basis anyways.
Remember, it was RT as well. I think it was one of the soccer shows, and Dara Maloney had to apologise for Richie Sadler for saying Jesus one time, you know, and that was probably just a reaction then, like that was an instant reaction on Twitter.
And
then,
some producers freaking out saying, yeah, there's 10 people giving out about
Let's just nip it in the bud now. But then Richie Sadler tweeted out himself saying, if you're offended by that, I don't know what to say to you, or something like that.
But no, but it's gone crazy. And the sooner I've constantly, did we talk about this on this show before, or was I just talking to somebody else? I don't think we did. But I think if the mob comes at a brand to apologise, if the brand just replied, fuck off, I swear their sales would rocket. They would get so many retweets, and you've stood up to this mob. Regular people don't give a shit about them. I would go and buy whatever it is. Is a Coca-Cola? I'd buy 10 cans of Coke on the back of somebody just replying back to these people. They're not representative of the population of the country, is my point.
Is this you asking me to go onto the Sports Show account and say fuck off to everybody who complains about it?
Yeah, exactly. So John Horan, I think he has a point. What do you think about this? Like, I mean, I made that point last week. There's good causes all the time. The rule is the rule. They bended it for inter-county. They're not bending it for club. I've no problem with that.
Yeah, no, it is the rules. I said I don't like the rules, but they are the rules, you know. So if you want to change the rules, then you should do it the proper way. I don't think he's very dismissive there of social media. It's very extreme, but I still think he can use it to get some feedback if you want, and see what people are saying, the way you would do with any sort of senses.
Yeah, but Twitter is it's very rarely positive.
Like, I know.
Twitter is a largely negative platform where you're not getting a balanced feedback, are you, really? Like, you're getting people who are just out for blood, really. Isn't
the punch bag for people?
Yeah.
You know, it's where they let it all out. But there are still, like, there's a lot of sense made on Twitter by some people as well, if you go looking for it. So, I don't know, it's an avenue there. I just wouldn't write it all off completely.
Yeah, okay. So, Kieran Donaghy was announced last week as Sky's newest pundit. So he was the obvious choice, I suppose, for them. They've lost James Horan, and they've lost Jim McGuinness. So they're two huge names to lose in the same year. So they only brought on Donaghy on. So they're one probably down across their actual. But they moved kind of down to two pundits now, haven't they? And Peter, where they used to have three, and Peter doing the analysis. So they've three pundits and two presenters. And that's all my problem. Kieran Donaghy will be great. Obviously, we know Kieran well, and we really like him on the show. He'll be a good pundit. But Horan's a good pundit, and McGuinness is a good pundit, and Canavan's outstanding, and Sky is still lacking something. And for me, it's the dynamic of two presenters plus three pundits. No debate, no discussion, because the presenters can't facilitate it because they don't have the back knowledge of GAA. And that's the problem. And it's a little bit sterile. It's not Canavan's fault, who, in fairness to him, turns around analysis brilliantly by half time. I don't know how he does that. That's not very easy at all. I don't know how he can actually enjoy the match, having the pressure of trying to find something interesting out at half time. Doing it on a Wednesday night show when you have 2 days to go through the footage. I did that before and I found that easy. But I don't know. I don't think I'd like to have to turn that around as I'm watching the first half. So, like, I mean, what he does is brilliant. But yeah, that's the thing. So you'll have Donaghy and you'll have Sen and Connell, or you'll have Donaghy and who else would they have then? It's just Donaghy, Sen, and Connell.
And
that's all they have now.
Yeah.
So that's not a. And then if Damien Lawler on back on board again this year, and no disrespect to Damien, but, like, I mean, I don't remember one interview, one memorable moment he's had. Like, he's very square and kind of boring and very formulaic, where I know they use Billy Joe Padden, I know they use Tomás Quinn. I'd much rather see those lads doing the interviews and being the sideline reporters than necessarily Damien Lawler, who has had a go at it and for me hasn't had one memorable moment in the time, you know, or memorable interview or any, you know. I just see Sky, they seem to be changing things only because they're losing pundits. I don't think they're necessarily trying to, you know, change it up. to make it better rather than just change it up because we have to.
The format breaks it up as well, doesn't it? Like, you have James Horn and Jim McGuinness who are getting into something and it's thrown over.
You have to move over because that's the format. So they could be getting into, well, I remember James Horn came into our dressing room and I gave him a headbutt because he was annoying me. No, just go across back to
Damien's over here.
Damien's down.
No! Unless that's what they're doing, they're going to bring them together and just, but they don't need the two presenters. That, like, the presenters is the problem. And again, not specifically the presenters, it's just the way it's used. And I know they're trying to sort of make themselves the anti-Sunday game and be a bit more sort of, remember the ad where Jim McGuinness was reading the Bible in the school corridor, whatever it was he was doing, but they're over at the tactics board. But they can do all that with three of them sitting around the panel. Like, you know, Peter Canavan can be part of that discussion and pull up his stats or his team shape.
That's my point. Peter's analysis should only be kicking off what the other lads react to.
Yeah.
And they can agree with it, they can disagree with it, they might have seen something different, and then it becomes a three-way chat. I think they could do with Peter Canavan presenting it. Just let Peter be the presenter who's showing this analysis, and the two lads are reacting to that.
What do you think?
You don't need the other two in it at all, actually. Do you know what I mean? Maybe keep Rachel to do the intro and outro and we'll be back or whatever, the pieces to camera, if Peter's not comfortable doing that. But anyways, it's not my job to produce that show. But it just got me thinking, Donaghy into the mix of punditry, of kind of big time punditry, really puts Kerry out on their own as having the most influential pundits in the whole country. So Kerry have three on the Sunday game. They have Spillane, who drives agendas, who likes to get... You have Gooch, who doesn't drive agendas. You have Tomás O'Shea, who I think Tomás O'Shea is balanced as well. He nearly overcompensates with Dublin. We've said this before.
Nice mixer. Him.
But a nice mix. And that's the flagship show now. That's what everybody's watching. So they have three on that. Now, I wouldn't accuse Gooch or Tomás of pushing an agenda for their county. You'd like to think that they're balanced enough that they wouldn't, but Pat Spillane certainly does. Then they have the Bomber Liston, who would have no problem pushing a Kerry agenda. You'll have Donaghy on Sky. So they're well stocked at national level on punditry. Dublin then have Kieran Whelan, they've Sen and Connell. Kieran Whelan likes to push a Dublin agenda, even though I think he's a very balanced pundit. I think he's a good one. I think he fights because Dublin have the persecution complex and I think everyone's against him. Yeah. Whelan will definitely push for them. Senan doesn't drive any agenda that I've seen. Maybe a little bit pro-Dublin. They've Alan Brogan on the Sunday Indo. Then they have the ones Paul Curran, Keith Barr, Vinnie Murphy. These lower level pundits, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, they might be even in Herald columnists, but think because they've such legends of the game, what they say can make headlines outside of that, and they absolutely drive an agenda. Like, there's no doubt about that.
It's a tough job for Kieran Whelan, isn't it, when you're such a legend of such, like, you know, it's obviously a very passionate support, and they're all probably expecting him then to form the defence. And every time he's talking, I can almost feel the pressure that he's under. Like, you know everyone's waiting to hear what Whelan has to say. You know, he'll put it right.
Because he has to put it right. Yeah.
So, like, if I was him, you know what, I'd probably feel that pressure too.
Yeah. No, it is definitely a pressure. I don't know any other counties in football who would have that big kind of a say. Mayo have nobody really. You know, funnily enough, they don't have any really big hitters.
Oh, David Brady, he was doing well for himself.
David Brady, like, he drives an agenda, but nobody takes him seriously. Kevin McStay, I suppose, is a big one. He's too good to drive any kind of agendas. Yeah. He's not into that. So, like, I mean, they don't have that. They'd have John Casey, maybe, who does RT Radio. He'd absolutely drive a Mayo agenda. You see the difference between the fellas who are completely objective across the whole country as much as possible and the fellas who drive their own county. I don't think you can take the ones that drive their own county seriously. They're letting themselves down. They can't, their opinion. And then you have the ultimate Joe Brawley, which he can jump on the Kerry side, on the Dublin side. No one knows what agenda he might want on a daily basis. But the pundits, the point I'm making is pundits who have agendas, you can't take their opinion seriously because you don't know if it's their honest opinion or if it's just an agenda, you know, part of the agenda that they usually do.
And the pundits on Sky, we said that they were good last year, like, none of them, I can't remember James Horn really talking about Mayo or McGuinness talking about Donegal, Canavan about Tyrone, what he does, but he analyses them. They're never agenda driven.
No, it's never agenda. In the Hurling, Kilkenny are the most stocked. They've Henry Shefflin, they've our own JJ Delaney, Eddie Brennan, and Tommy Walsh does a bit on air as well, so they're probably well stocked. But again, none of them. Anyway, there's no real agendas in hurling. It doesn't really happen.
Hurling's
just fantastic. So speaking of JJ Delaney, he was talking at that same launch for Sky. And he's talking about the five in a row. So Henry Shefflin was on a media day last week as well, and I see some quotes from him talking about the five in a row. So obviously in 2010, Kilkenny were going for the five in a row, the most recent, and that was arguably the greatest hurling team of all time. But as we mentioned on the show, Tipperary weren't just All-Sarans. In the four in a row final, Kilkenny were very lucky to get out alive against Tipperary. So, you know, the five in a row wasn't as straightforward for Kilkenny with Tipperary sniffing around under Liam Sheedy. So JJ's talking about the pressure. He says, if you go down to the shop for a litre of milk or a newspaper, people are talking to you about it. It takes over the whole county. It's all people want to talk about. You just can't escape it. You'd be at work and lads are asking the same questions. You'd end up answering the same questions maybe 10 times over the day. It's the sort of thing that you can't get away from, and something the Dublin players are going to have to deal with this summer. If you get into your head if you're talking about it, especially the five in a row. It's a motivation, and if you win Leinster and get to an All-Ireland semi-final, it gets more real, and more the year goes on, the more real it gets. You begin to let yourself thinking about winning it because it's an opportunity that you'll never get back. I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm almost thinking, how are these Dublin lads going to handle this? Because we know Dublin is the big glamour team in the country. There's no one ever denied that. That's, and Kerry maybe a little bit in the football, and for them to do the five in a row, like the media attention on Dublin, and that's why Jim Gavin obviously has completely controlled their output, their media output, and has the media manager to the point where people accuse them of being boring, which I don't think they're boring. I think that that's just a completely planned tactic to keep the hype down. So this year is going to be a nightmare for Jim Gavin, because the hype is going to get real and there's no avoiding this hype. So how he manages that, I've said, sure, he has some sort of a plan in place, but how he can kind of cocoon his players and shelter them for the, like what JJ said, if you're talking about it to everyone you meet, it's just in your head, and psychologically these matches become much bigger than what they would usually. So like, I mean, I don't really know how a manager would potentially avoid that, unless he wants to take his players away for the whole month of August and
on a history trip
to France. And I don't know, because if you're in your own company all the time then, and you're kept away from that, maybe that, if they were to lose, then you'd blame that, well, they never did that before. And you know, if you're going for five in a row and you're at All-Ireland final stage, the definite help to them is that there's no 3 week lead into the All-Ireland, or there's only 1 week lead into the semi-final, so it comes ticking fast, so you're not getting maybe that long wait that used to be there. I think it used to be three weeks to a semi-final and 3 weeks to a final. Your head would be absolutely melted. Yeah. So maybe the new structure might help them.
No, the only thing, it's easier to cocoon yourself in Dublin than it is in Kilkenny, I think. Like, if you go down to the shop for milk,
well, that's true, yeah,
in Drumcondra, you might not meet an Irish person, never alone, yeah, a Dublin supporter. So I think that's a bit easier. But also, my question is, are Dublin further ahead than Kilkenny were, than Tipperary? Like, Dublin seemed to be cut off more than Kilkenny were cut off. I know Kilkenny were the dominant force and stuff, but they had more realistic contenders, right, than Dublin do.
Yeah, only Tip. Like, I mean, they had been winning All-Irelands very easily. The first three in a row were all hammerings.
Right.
Then they met Tipperary for the four, and that was, Tip nearly had that one until there was a penalty given to Kilkenny. Remember Brian Cody after the game, Marty had the cheek to ask him about the penalty. Anyways, well, like, even you, as not knowing anything about hurling, would remember that. So then the five in a row, obviously they were beaten in the final. So that was it. So look, it's just going to be interesting to see how this summer continues on. I haven't a clue what I'm talking about, because I didn't do one in a row, never mind five in a row, all Ireland. So like, I mean, I'm as interested and curious about this as anybody.
You're just looking for something to make it interesting, is what you're doing.
Well, it is interesting. But anyways, listen, that's enough on that. Two or three more pieces of news here before we go is Dara Canavan, who I saw on the Flesh the other night and spoke to some of the Errigal Kieran lads, and this fella's the real deal. He has everything Peter has. He's not as fat, or he's a little bit faster than what Peter was. One or two fellas says that he's not as accurate as Peter, and one or two told me, well, that's a load of nonsense, he is. So he was all right the other night. It was a defensive game, the team they were playing, so he didn't get to get on too much ball. Scored a point while I was there in the second half, but like, I mean, there's definite serious speed there. So he's gone back to concentrate on the under 20. So Mickey Hart's actually released him, and I was just thinking that if it was last year under Tyrone's old tactics, Darragh Canavan is starting on that team because he's going to play the Mark Bradley role, the Lee Brennan role, the whatever that Mark Conor McCallisky, maybe the one up top or
the
whatever.
Decoy, basically.
The decoy, yeah. Small, fast lad. And now these new tactics have made it almost impossible really for him to start, because the four starting forwards are going to be Matty Donnelly, McShane, and then the Sludden and Hart trying to stay close enough to them and give a nice ball, and the other two will be workers. So I suppose Darragh Canavan is looking around. I'd say he's maybe not too disappointed that he gets to play under 20. Like, he's still very, very young. Yeah. Play a full year under 20. When the under 20s are finished, he can still go back in onto the senior panel. So this makes perfect sense to me. And for his development, it makes perfect sense. And it's just the right thing to do all round.
Yeah, it's better for both parties, because I jotted down like 9 forwards Tyrone still have. And they still have the different options like Lee Brennan and McCurry. And they can bring in Kyle Coney and McCallisky. These boys won't even be starting the team, like, you know. So it's not like they're relying on Darragh Canavan to come in and change it up.
And maybe in the future, because Darragh Canavan will be on this team next year. He's just too good not to be. So they'll have to find... Mickey Hart's going to have that question of how I'm going to shape things to get him on it. So then you might be looking at a case where you've Matty Donnelly and you have McShane in there, and you've Darragh playing out in the top of the D in front of them with Peter Hart and Sludden a little bit further back. Do you know what I mean? So they're still giving in good ball, but Darragh's making that first break out. He's getting on a bit more ball. Maybe that's a role, and maybe have one working, because Tyrone are getting back towards where Sludden and Hart can do a little bit more of the work. But he's going... This is not my job to find that, to find this out, but he's going to have to find a position for Darragh Canavan, because you don't not play Darragh Canavan next year.
Yeah, well, they could still have the two workers. Of course, I would be advocating for that, but they could have like Hart and Sludden rotating. Like, you know, you're working
one of the two,
yeah, and then come back up and get your breather up here, and I'll go back.
Yeah, but I don't think Darragh can play that role of the half hour type role. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He has to be inside.
Bring Matty Donnelly.
Matty Donnelly could do that.
He's in the 45, and then the other two rotating. Who's working or who's not?
Yeah. Okay. Well, sir, look, that's for Mickey Hart to think about anyways. And like I said, we are releasing a show tomorrow, and the first 20 minutes is a one-on-one with me and Mickey Hart. So he's in great form, he's in relaxed mood, so that's well worth listening to. So make sure you tune into that. We'll be putting it out in the morning. Gavin White, so he's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks after dislocating his elbow in club duty. Another problem down in Kerry. So Kerry are out on June 1st. So I think that's obviously there into the semi-final. That's Clare in the semi-final like every other year. So it doesn't look like he'll make that, but he should be back. Again, dislocated elbow means that he'll still be in flying fit form when he gets back for a Munster final. You'd imagine he needs to get straight back in onto the team for that bit of pace on either a counter-attack or just to try and drive them forward.
Yeah, well, they won't really need him until the Super 8s anyway, will they? So he'll be all right until then.
No, exactly. Last one was Navin O'Mahony's. This is one I just came across, so I didn't realise this was a really big problem. So they have declared a mobile phone ban for underage for your Saturday, Sunday morning. So they have... said that their nursery, their underage nursery, Pride of Clubs, is a phone-free zone. And they have asked parents to show more interest in their child's development as young footballers and hurlers than their mobile phone. So, like, I didn't realise, like, parents would go, see, this is Twitter. Stay off it. Stay off it. Yeah. Honestly, I cannot stress enough how much happier my life is that I'm not on it. I'm only on it on a Sunday when I have to work and I have to get roundups of games on a Sunday night, and I'll check for tweets or stuff. I use the GER account for that. I follow no one on my own account. I use my own account for the odd tweet to read the replies, whatever, and that would be it. But honestly, number one, you've more time in the day that you're not just sitting on the couch flicking around stupid Twitter. Number two, you're living in the real world, which is completely different place to Twitter world. And all these Muppets that are on it. So, like, I mean, I'd be very surprised that parents, maybe it's not Twitter, they might be on Instagram. There's an Instagram addiction going around as well. My partner, Itzy, I think, is stuck in the middle of one at the moment. So I have had to pull her up on that. But, like, I mean, it's easy to get sucked into Instagram and following people's fake lives. And they're really unhappy, but they're trying to convince you that they're unbelievably happy. And suddenly you're being jealous of someone's life when they're actually in the pits of despair. Yeah. Like, it's poxy. It's all poxy. It's not real life. But I'm surprised to hear that parents are going on their bringing their children down to hurling and football training and not fecking looking at them play and going on their phones that a club has had to take. Do you think this is a publicity kind of thing for Navan and Matneys, or do you think that that's a real problem?
No, I'd say that is a real problem. Like, you know, I know
we saw the picture of the three lads at the at the Tipperary hurling match.
They've chosen to go to a game. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who will have to, like, you know, bring your son down to the training there or whatever, or like an uncle might get roped into bringing somebody down and then they spend their time on their phone and as well. Those boys have chosen to go to that game, which is the weird one. They probably paid in, but
yeah,
I'd say that club might regret it then when they start hearing those parents and overcoaching from the sideline and shouting at them and being negative.
That's the other one then. Right, listen, we're going to leave it there, Conor, and we're going to come back with some championship predictions because we've no championship preview show. We're going to do a show preview in the two games at the weekend on Thursday, so at least we'll put our necks on the block and we'll give you our predictions and whoever we think we're going to are going to win the provinces and the All-Ireland. We'll come back and give you that next. Happiness hit her like a train on a
track. I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, fast for you.
Okay, so we'll start with Leinster, Conan. We know Dublin are going to win Leinster. Unfortunately for all the other counties, that's set in stone. I suppose the question is, who are they going to beat in the final? You'd imagine Meath are the front runners based on their league form, but I wouldn't think it's a foregone conclusion. Leash are over there, Westmeath are over there, Offaly are over there, and Carlow are over there, I'm pretty sure. So literally every single one of those counties would have their ambition to be in a Leinster final. So, like, I mean, who do you think Dublin are going to beat in the final?
Yeah, Leash and Westmeath is a very tough quarter final. I was already looking at Leash thinking, oh, they're in the quarters, you know, good year last year. John Shukru. Right at it. I think I'm going to go with Meath though, just on the laws of probability, because I can see them in the semi-final already and I can't see Leash or Westmeath because I think it's such a tight game there, so I'm going to go with Meath.
Yeah, I'll go with Meath as well this year. I think, geez, it's all or nothing for Meath. If they don't build on the progress of the league, and they were very good in the league. Now, I don't think they're too far ahead of Leash or Westmeath, so I do think that they could potentially get caught by either one of those two teams. But you would fancy them just to get into the final, and if they could keep it within 7 or 8 points of Dublin, they'd be doing very well. But realistically, that's probably the best that they could ask for. Munster, obviously, we start with the two more straightforward ones. Munster is obviously going to be Kerry. And they'll play Cork or Tipperary in the final, isn't that right? So yeah, I'm going to go for Cork. Cork beat Tipperary well last year in the championship. I think Tipperary have plateaued. I think Cork might get it together a little bit for a one-off game with Tip. Obviously Kerry to win the final then convincingly enough, although Cork might play very defensively in the final based on what happened last year and the way they're playing this year, so they might not take the same hammering. Kerry to win, Munster to beat Cork in the final. What do you think?
I'm going to go with Tipperary in the final, Kerry to win, but Tip play Limerick, which is, I think, gets them building, and then they play Cork a few weeks later. Cork are in a free fall and they've got no game to sort of get themselves up for it, so yeah, I'm going to go with Tip to be Cork and Kerry to be Tip.
Okay, so we're differing there. So then the two provinces that at least have us thinking a little bit. So Connacht first. So Galway have the easier route into a final. Mayo will have to play Roscommon. This is all things going well. We know Leitrim are improving. Sligo not so much. So Mayo will play Roscommon, you'd imagine, in semi-final, and Galway will be in the final. So, like, I'm going for Galway to win this again. I think they have the game to beat Mayo. I think they have the players that can hurt Mayo. They have the system that frustrates Mayo. Mayo don't necessarily like playing Galway of recent memory and playing against the Galway system, which, you know, they're well able to track their runners. They're well able to played them in that disorganised, messy game. And Galway have seemed to be coming out on top because in that disorganised, messy game, they have the Comer, they have the Walsh, they have the special forwards who are able to get scores easier than Mayo, who Mayo haven't been able to seem to score much against Galway, against this Galway team. So I don't see that having changed because I see Mayo's forward line haven't been weakened. with Aidan O'Shea not being in it, with Andy Moran most likely being an impact sub, Killeen O'Connor will come back in. I can see Mayo progressing on to the Super 8s, but I can see Galway beating them in the final.
Yeah, it was down in Leitrim, and they were taking a good omen from 1994 because they beat Roscommon, they beat Mayo, and they beat Galway when they last won the Connacht.
Wow.
And they'll have to do the same again this year to do that, but I don't think Leitrim are going to win. I think it'll be Mayo-Galway. Mayo, I think, will beat Roscommon in the semi-final. And I think Galway... I think Galway will win as well. I wish I could say something different, but I just haven't watched the last six games. Like it seems a bit hopeless sometimes for Mayo when they're attacking, and Galway seem to have their number on every level.
Yeah, they definitely do. When they get in their faces, they piss them off. Mayo get lads sent off. It's all sorts of things. Galway have really gotten inside Mayo's heads. Now, we don't know if Comer's going to be back for that Connacht final. It's touch and go, I think, obviously, that foot injury, and what kind of work will he have done? So that's a huge plus, obviously, for Mayo. If Comer wasn't involved, Galway are clearly a weaker team. We don't know if Paul Conroy in midfield will be back. He'll be a big loss. So they have a few injuries. Their two midfielders, Duggan and Cook, even though Cook has been playing in the forwards, they're injury doubts as well. So we don't know what Galway is going to show up in the final. But as it stands now, I think Mayo at full strength, Galway at full strength, I would be going leaning a little bit towards Galway. So that's it. Ulster then.
I thought you were wrapping the whole thing up there. I was like, that's not it. There's another province.
That's your persecution complex. Now you think you're being ignored, not criticised. So Ulster then. Like, Ulster's very interesting this year because the two favourites, Donegal and Tyrone, are on one side. That's the big, big semi-final on that side, you'd imagine. And then anyone on the other side, Armagh, Down, Cavan, Monaghan, all have a chance of getting into the final. I think it's between Armagh and Monaghan for me. I think Armagh will finally beat Down and win a match this year. I think Monaghan versus Cavan, that's a real derby game, and you know, we have to see where Monaghan's injuries are at. I know Monaghan are the clear favourites to get into a final, but it's a really difficult province to call, this one.
Yeah, I
can't beat the Ulster Championship for suspense.
I find it so depressing because it seems that Derry are playing Tyrone every year, so they don't even get going in the Ulster Championship, and it's a nice start for Tyrone at home to Derry, and then Antrim sort of gimme in the quarter final. Well up for a semi-final then against Donegal. I think they'll beat Fermanagh. I'm going to back Tyrone to win Ulster this year because I just, Monaghan, a few injuries, and Tyrone obviously getting their act together and looking even better than last year. I'm going to go with them.
Going to go with Tyrone. Tyrone to beat Donegal, even though Donegal really, like, no, McNeilish isn't there, but John Gallen's an outstanding player, mm-hmm. and O'Donnell, and you know, they have a brilliant forward line. The Michael Murphy, if Tyrone are going with that maybe more adventurous game plan with four forwards being left up there, those diagonal balls to Murphy are going to hurt them as well. Now, yeah. I know McNamee's a battler and he could maybe do all right on Murphy, but that's, I find that impossible to call, that Donegal-Tyrone game. I heard you could make an unbelievable case. It's so 50-50 that you could actually, and the winner of that, you'd imagine, is going to win the Ulster title. So that's there's an awful lot riding on that. And obviously we'll have the easier route into the Super 8s, because I was trying to predict Super 8s and then I realised, sure, it's a nonsense predicting who the 8 teams in the Super 8s will be, because the only ones guaranteed are your four provincial winners. The provincial losers can go back and play somebody who comes up through the qualifier. So you could say Monaghan, or say Tyrone lose to Donegal, and then they play, I don't know, Monaghan then, who lose the Ulster final. You might say Tyrone and Monaghan are two of your Super 8s, but like,
yeah,
the only guarantees in the Super 8s are the four provincials. The other four are completely, you can't just pick the 8 strongest teams, basically, is the point.
Well, that's like, because you're right, because either Tyrone or Donegal are going to be in those Super 8s who will play a provincial loser.
That's
so
what I mean.
Mayo could be playing them if they lose to Galway, so yeah. Mayo might not make a Super 8 suddenly.
So basically you can't predict Super 8s, which would have been nice, but anyways, we'll finish on the All-Ireland. Who's going to win the All-Ireland, Conan?
Dublin.
You think Dublin are going to win it?
Let's move on.
Despite all the pressure. Here's the funny thing with me, with this. I think Kerry can beat Dublin. I don't think Mayo can beat Dublin. I think Mayo can beat Kerry. Yeah. I think Tyrone and Donegal can beat Mayo or Kerry. I don't think they can beat Dublin. Well, Tyrone maybe, but that was a league game. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think Tyrone might be a little bit too soon. I don't think Galway can beat Dublin with their game plan. I think Galway can beat Mayo. I think Galway can beat Kerry. Do you know, I think Kerry are the only team with the game plan. But maybe Tyrone, maybe I even think Donegal could cause them a lot of problems if they committed to this game plan like they saw Tyrone doing it. So if Galway committed, if Galway committed to that game plan like Tyrone did in that league final, Comer and Walsh and Sy, they have a game plan that could potentially beat Dublin. We don't know whether all the teams are going to have seen Tyrone in that league game and go, we're committing to these four up with the 2.5 hour line giving really good diagonal ball into the two lads inside. And if Galway, Donegal, Tyrone, well, Tyrone have committed to it, they could potentially beat Dublin, because Donegal have Michael Murphy, McBrearty, Gallen. They could eat Dublin alive. They could get goals. But you can't. You have to give them good ball in good positions. Galway, we know, have Comer. They have Ian Burke. They have Walsh. They have Heaney. They have Brannigan. They have Michael Daly. They have forwards that could score 2-2 in 5 minutes. And then Dublin are under axe, right? But they have to commit to that style of football and try and beat Dublin. The attitude has to be that. Mayo favour a running game against Dublin. I don't think that they can beat Dublin at that game. I don't think they can. That's been proven, and especially under James Horan, they'll play the running game a little bit more than Stephen Rochford troubled Dublin by giving good long direct ball into Andy Moran, and that troubled Dublin a lot. I see Mayo playing more of a running game under James Horan with that half attacking half back line, and that can cause a lot of problems. But I think Dublin will be comfortable with that. I think Kerry can score 2-2 against Dublin inside in 5 minutes and give them all sorts of problems, you know what I mean, with Clifford Walsh, Paul Geaney. So a lot of these contenders have forward lines that can hurt Dublin, but are they going to use them? Or are they going to let Dublin win in All-Ireland by walking all over them and laughing at their game plan, which we saw last year? So that's the question.
I'd feel more confident of Tyrone and Galway if they committed and got their game plan right, going at Dublin and maybe beating them, than Kerry. Are Kerry good enough?
Well, you see, the reason I'm saying Kerry is that we know Kerry will play that game against Dublin.
Yeah.
Do you know, at least we're guaranteed Kerry will leave four forwards up there, and they love a kicking game.
And their forwards are brilliant.
So that's why I'm saying Kerry can beat Dublin, Mayo can't. The others I'm undecided about because I don't know exactly. Yeah. Well, Tyrone, I think Tyrone can beat Dublin.
I think they will do it as well.
I think Tyrone, they proved in the league they could do it. Whether Tyrone are good enough to beat a Dublin team at full strength, flat out in the championship, that's
five subs, six subs.
That's there to be seen as well, you know. So, like, I mean, it is interesting. But, like, finally, like we said, Dublin absolutely are looking at these teams now going, geez, I hope they don't do what Tyrone did. I hope Donegal are going to just come up to Croke Park and roll over, which they pretty much did last year. Dublin beat them handy at their ease, because Donegal didn't commit to try and beat Dublin. Donegal tried to contain Dublin. And that's been the attitude for the last 5 years. And until teams change that attitude and go and try and beat Dublin, sure, if you don't try to go beat them, how can you beat them?
Yeah. Do you know that game in Tralee in the league this year? I think Kerry are the only team in Ireland who would have won that, because Dublin had that amazing comeback. Like, they looked beaten and they came back like Dublin do.
Yeah.
And I think Kerry are the only team in Ireland who would have had the balls to ante up again and say, we're going to try and score one more and win the match. And they did. They went for it and they scored. But the only thing, like, I just think it's too out of control sometimes when Kerry play Dublin. They just look so loose and they never seem to have a grip on things at the back, like, yeah. Mayo, obviously Mayo can handle their forward line so they can limit them a bit, but Kerry never seemed to have that handle.
No, that's the danger. That's why I'm saying that Kerry's attitude, which I think it will be, is that we have to outscore Dublin because we can't contain them.
Yeah.
We don't have the game plan to contain them. But you can't beat them by containing them.
Yeah.
Like, unless you get that balance right. Tyrone showed the balance of leaving four up and long diagonal balls and balls over the top, and Kerry did that down in Killarney, long balls over the top, bombard that full back line, get a couple of goals. You won't beat Dublin on points. You have to score 3-4 goals. The team that beats Dublin this summer will have scored 3-12 and Dublin will have gotten 16 points, yeah. You know, or 1-14, or so, you know, it could be even 4-12. It could be a freak result where two goals go in inside in a minute. Dublin's brains are scrambled. Like, I can see Kerry doing that in my head.
Yeah.
I can't really see any of the other teams necessarily doing it, because I haven't evidence of how they could do it, you know.
What was it, Donegal? Was it 3-12 Donegal scored in 2014, or was 3 something anyway?
Oh, that was 3-15. That was a big score, yeah.
So the last time a team beat them, they got 3 goals.
That's it. You have to score goals. And if you don't have a game plan to score goals, you won't score goals. Is that fair enough? Right, that's as basic analysis as we can get. Right,
who are you going for? He didn't commit to a team.
Look, Jesus, I find it hard. I think Dublin will do it. I think Dublin will finally get over the line, but only because I can't be sure the other teams are going to commit to try and beat them. And I think, like you said, with the Kerry defence, I can see Dublin getting goals against them.
If you had assurances from everybody else, you would.
If I had assurances that all the other teams would go out and try and beat them, I think the pressure on Dublin is going to be enormous. It's going to be so big that you could catch them. Yeah. This year, rather better than any year, you could catch them. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. Because you see, like, I mean, if you're giving in some long diagonal balls, the pressure, the crowd is going, whoa, the Dublin lads are going to start. This is a five in a row. It has never, ever, ever been done in the history of GAA in hurling or football. That's a huge pressure. And if JJ and Henry and all these lads couldn't do it, and they're talking about the pressure, like, I mean, now, if not ever, get that ball in and make them under even more pressure than they already were. Yeah. Pressurise all their kickouts. Give them nothing handy. Don't give them the Johnny Cooper quick kickout if you can avoid it at all time. Give them nothing easy and let Dublin try and win it. Still think Dublin probably, Dublin are probably like the greatest Gaelic football team I've seen. Now, I was too young for the brilliant Kerry team, but like, I mean, I still think Dublin should do it. But it's going to be definitely, and they'll get a lot of scares along the way if the other teams can step up to the plate, and I think they will as well. Do you?
Just got to put them under pressure.
Got to put them under pressure, Jack Charlton style. All right, okay, we'll be back. Like I said, we will bring you a hurling show. Actually, we're splitting out the podcast, so I'm going to interview Joe Canning on Wednesday. So we'll do a hurling show on Thursday, and we'll do a football preview show as usual, and we have that special show, live show from Errigal Kieran, and we'll let that out, release that tomorrow. So we'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.